You're listening to Game Play with Matthew Cause on TSN 1050. We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Game Play. I am your host, Matthew Cause. The Leafs are off for a couple days, taking on the Anaheim Ducks on Wednesday night. But there still is some interesting action going on in the NHL. Kings at Rangers, Vegas at Washington. Joining me now to talk all things NHL and Maple Leafs from VSiN, it is NHL gambling analyst Andy McNeil. Andy, as always, thanks for joining the show today.
Yeah, no problem. Great to be on.
So I'm curious, when you view like a team like the Leafs and coming back, or not coming back, holding on to that 3-1 lead and defeating the New York Islanders on the weekend, the trend of them blowing games, they're still the average in the NHL. Like, it's not like they're way ahead of everyone else in terms of blowing two-goal leads. I'm curious how you view Toronto, because when you're betting, so many things are about trends, how you view the Maple Leafs when it comes to holding leads.
Well, I don't view them as – I think it comes down to who they're lined up against more than anything, and I think that has to do – or that's the case in a lot of these scenarios here. And, I mean – I know we talked about it a few weeks ago when they blew that lead to the Avalanche. That was an easy bet to make. And, you know, it didn't have as much to do with the Maple Leafs being, having any kind of penchant for blowing leads as much as it did, the Avalanche just being a very good hockey team that's capable of clawing back in a situation like that. So, I don't think that the Maple Leafs, are a team that anybody should be looking at on a regular basis to blow leads. It's going to happen from time to time, just like it happens with every other team. And, Toronto does play that high pace style, and sometimes that does leave you exposed. So, and obviously everything gets blown up because it is the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, especially when you have a couple extra days off, you're going to focus on these subjects a little bit more. I wonder, and okay, you could just say on a scale of 1 to 10, how crazy, and I just thought of this now, this betting angle when it comes to the Maple Leafs, when it comes to the totals. When they've had like a game like they did against the Rangers, and maybe it's just because the Islanders, you know, we're not talking about a high-end offensive team, but I wonder if you would side more on the under after the Leafs have had one or two of those really bad games defensively where you know there's enough talent there where they're like, okay, guys, let's be on our best behavior so our coach doesn't yell at us. Like, I wonder what the percentage of Leaf games that hit the under after they've had a really bad defensive performance.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I think across the board, a lot of times I look at a matchup like the Maple Leafs and the Islanders as a game that the Maple Leafs should win more often than not, obviously, but also one that they should win in a fairly low-scoring affair. This is an Islanders team that doesn't score very many goals, and you can compare them to other teams around the league, so... I think that factors into it a lot. When you have a team that's as good as the Maple Leafs, and you can go around the league and name other teams like the Lightning and the Avalanche and the Panthers and so on and so forth, when they get into these situations against teams that aren't very good but aren't very bad defensively, you're going to see them win games 3-1 and 4-2 and things like that, as opposed to those big scores where, you know, the Maple Leafs are maybe giving up 3 or 4 goals, but still winning the game. That you kind of it often comes down to the play styles of the two teams, I think, more than anything, when I'm looking at playing a game over the total.
The Leafs will play 14 games in March, and they will play 15 games in April. And in the work that you do when looking ahead and handicapping, schedule is often a big part of it. Your thoughts on the Leafs' March and April schedule and any impact that it might have in terms of where you put your money?
Yeah, it's going to be pretty daunting. Luckily, it's quite spread out as far as home games and road games. They're not going to be, you know, on the road for any lengthy stretch or anything like that by the looks of things. But it's going to be tough. I've been analyzing the schedule heading into each season, usually not as much the last couple of years. I've had to do a lot more work in season because of all of the postponements. But You know, heading into the last several seasons, I've done a lot of work analyzing the schedule. And, you know, historically, if you look, teams maybe play 13 games in a month like November or March, and that is a rarity. 12 is usually the average for those longer months during a regular season. So, you know, having to play that many games in that stretch is going to be a pretty daunting task. And, you know, hopefully the Maple Leafs can stay healthy and they can ride both goaltenders. I know Peter Mrazek has had a bit of a tough time getting going here, but hopefully that last game will do some good for him. But it's you know, it doesn't look like there's any stretches where the Maple Leafs should be overwhelmed. It looks like they should do all right during this stretch, despite the fact that it's really condensed.
Let's talk about a couple. It is condensed. And as you're saying now, Peter Mrazek. All right, you didn't do much early in the year. Fine, it's injuries, it happens. But you're gonna have to earn your money this spring. So there's a couple games of note tonight. Vegas at Washington. How much do you put in the trends of Vegas? They've won six straight on the road. Capitals have lost seven of their last nine, four of their last seven games at home. It feels like Vegas at plus 105 is the latest line I'm seeing. It seems like the safe bet. In your mind, is that the right bet?
Well, the Vegas Golden Knights, as good as they've been on the road as of late, they've only won two out of their last seven. So their current form isn't all that good. And, you know, obviously they're missing some players. Mark Stone, he's in COVID protocol right now. But the big news coming out today was that Max Pacioretty and Alex Martinez are traveling with the team on the road. I don't think they're going to play tonight, but they've got games coming up tomorrow against Carolina and a date with the Panthers and the Lightning coming up on this four-game road trip. So they'll want to get those guys back in the lineup as soon as possible. You know, I thought there was a little bit of value on the Vegas Golden Knights earlier. The line, it got all the way up to around plus 130, and it's still there at some shops. And you can, you know, maybe make a small bet on the Golden Knights at that price. But John Carlson, he's back in the lineup tonight. A lot of the Capitals' struggles as of late had to do with the fact that they're missing Oshie. They were missing three of their best defensemen, arguably their three best defensemen in Carlson, Orlov, and Nick Jensen. So they get Orlov back from suspension tonight, Carlson back from the COVID list. The line moved in Washington's favor. It's the Golden Knights or nothing if you're looking at this game.
And then the other one, the Kings at the Rangers. First thing I did was ask my producer, is Shesterkin in net tonight? And he is. So then, yeah, that makes me lean towards the under. Any thoughts on Kings-Rangers?
Yeah, I agree with you there. I have a small edge to the under. Jonathan Quick likely in goal tonight. Los Angeles coming out that come-from-behind win over the Devils last night. The Rangers aren't really rested. They're playing their third game in four nights, and they're missing a couple of forwards. But yeah, with Shesterkin in goal and Quick in goal, this game probably trends towards the under. I thought that the Rangers were priced a little bit too high earlier in the day, but that's come down. The Kings were around plus 140, but it looks like they've come down to plus 130. The game that I've had the most interest, really the game that I had the only bit of interest in today from a betting perspective, was the Flames and the Blues, and that's the bet that I made today was on the Calgary Flames earlier, at around minus 145 up to minus 150. They dropped a game to the Oilers, which probably didn't feel good. They were in the driver's seat in that game with a 2-0 lead, a little bit of penalty trouble, and Edmonton crawls back on a big performance from Mikko Koskinen. But Calgary, I think they are right there. I think they're, you know, right behind the teams like the Leafs and the Panthers and the Carolina Hurricanes as far as being an elite team. They don't have the star power, obviously, but this is about as well structured team as you'll find in the NHL. And St. Louis, they've won eight of their last 10, but you know, they've only really played four good games. If I'm looking at things from a statistical perspective, they've had a negative expected goal differential in six out of those 10 games. And really, it's been on the back of Billy Husso, who's won his last five starts. Jordan Binnington, he's won three out of his last five, but he hasn't played very well. He's let in four goals in three out of those five starts, and or at least four goals in three out of those five starts, and he'll likely get the nod tonight in Calgary. So like the Flames to turn it around and take down a formidable opponent in St. Louis tonight.
Andy, really appreciate, as always. We will chat soon. Good luck. Good luck with Calgary. Good luck with your bets.
Thank you very much. Good luck, guys.
Yeah, take care. That is Andy McNeil. Again, VSiN NHL gambling analyst. You can follow him on Twitter, at Digital Gambler. Go to VSiN. You can check out his work there. Every day he does his NHL betting market report. And, I mean, that is a lot of work to get that done, just to keep up with, you know, who's in and who's out. How many, you know, oh, Carlson's back for Washington. What does that mean? You know, and just how that impacts the game, the money line, the over-unders, and everything in between. All right, let's we'll get back into the NFL. We'll hear from Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady about their future. That's coming up in just a moment. But first, time now for a News Talk 1010 traffic update. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Kaz. And yes, in the last segment, I got my Australian 80s band wrong. It was Men at Work with Land Down Under. I said Men Without Hats. That, of course, the safety dance is Men Without Hats, so that one is on me. Someone writing in, Nylander dropped to the third line. Good. Maybe the end is in sight. I don't know. Nylander's having a good year. Listen, I don't want to live in a world. Listen, I don't want to live in a world where everyone loves Nylander, okay? I don't. Like, to me, it's part of what of the tapestry of being a Toronto sports fan is there's always going to be people arguing about William Nylander. I enjoy that normalcy in my life. And someone else called me out on it. The most important thing is that they played the New York Islanders, not the St. Louis Blues. Again, I can't tell you why I keep confusing those teams. There is no connection between the New York Islanders and the St. Louis Blues.
They both wear like a little maroon blue. No, there isn't. Yeah. I was just trying to help you out, but there really isn't.
Yeah, there really isn't. There's nothing there. It's just, you know. Someone else writing in, arguably the greatest NFL playoff game ever, decided by a coin flip. Total Bush League. Regarding Rodgers, he's been saying stupid things dating back to the 2005 draft. Now 0-4 against the Niners in the playoffs. So good to see Rodgers lose. What an idiot. Dean from Etobicoke writing in with that. We got to, again, read between the lines to see what he's really thinking there. Speaking of Aaron Rodgers, he was asked after the game his thoughts. Aaron, what's next for you and the Packers?
I did not think we'd be talking about this after this game, but, you know, I'm going to take some time and have conversations with the folks around here and then take some time away and make a decision, obviously, before free agency or anything kind of gets going on that front. But it's fresh right now. It's you know, a little shocking for sure.
The start of the quote's interesting because he says, I didn't think we'd be talking about this right now. So it's like he knows. I think he's done there personally.
It's interesting, only because I was reading this Mike Sando article from The Athletic, and he's thinking the other side, saying, quote, it seems notable that Rodgers said he planned to speak with members of the organization before deciding what to do. The inclusive language suggests the parties are working from positions of mutual respect. So take that for what it's worth. As for Aaron Rodgers, to me, I don't, like, maybe the Saints. Like, I'm just trying to think, where is the landing spot for him?
Oh, I got two for you. Ready?
Okay.
Broncos? Mm-hmm. Steelers. I think those two franchises, if they can add someone to Aaron Rodgers' caliber, instantly Super Bowl contenders. They're just missing that one piece, and Aaron Rodgers is a really big piece.
I don't go to Denver because you also get Mahomes and Herbert twice a year.
Great point.
But you are right. Like, Denver's got a lot, but how much does Denver have to lose to bring in Aaron Rodgers? That's the thing, is these teams, you know, like, oh, they got all this talent, but what are you getting rid of to bring him in? Because Rodgers is technically still under contract. I would say the Steelers. Yeah, the Steelers makes a lot of sense. Again, how much do you got to get rid of to bring him in?
Well, yeah, and that's the point. It takes two to trade. Like, why would the Packers give him up? If I'm the Packers, I would do what the Texans did, obviously, completely different circumstances. Sean Watts, make him sit out a year if he doesn't want to play for you. Like, that's just kind of what I would do, because I would rather have Aaron Rodgers not play than play for somebody else.
San Francisco. That's the fun
one,
isn't it?
That is the fun answer.
That is the fun
answer.
They have
Trey Lance as like a young, intriguing trade chip.
Mm-hmm. You're going to have to, I'm just trying to think of what makes the most sense is for them to find a way to get it done. You re-sign Devonta Adams or you put the franchise tag on him so he can't go anywhere. There is a lot of talent on the team. Now, they are in quote-unquote salary cap hell. $40 million over the cap, second highest deficit. So the interesting thing there is, would Aaron Rodgers, would he restructure his deal? His cap hit next year is $46 million. But if he signs some sort of extension, that number can go down. How and why? I have no idea. I actually, Austin, tried to, I was just doing a little digging over the weekend on the contract. And as I'm reading about how he can lower the overall cap hit, I just got bored. I'm reading it, and then at some point, my eyes start to just roll back, and I'm like, huh, I don't get any of this.
I wasn't expecting you to go bored, hence the surprise laugh, but the NFL salary cap is so complicated. The Saints were $80 million over the cap somehow this year, but then they weren't, and then the Packers with Aaron Rodgers is exactly that number. You know, you think the NHL with its escrow and the NBA with its luxury tax. No, none of them hold a candle on the NFL. It is so complicated when trying to figure out the financials behind it. We do have Adam Schefter talking about that if you want that, though, Matt.
Let's give it. Let's hear what's next for the Packers.
The Green Bay Packers head into the offseason, $44.8 million over the salary cap. Aaron Rodgers carries a salary cap number of over $46 million. And this goes back to last summer, right before training camp, when his contract was restructured and designed to get him into camp and to give him the leverage, the flexibility, the options to do what he wanted to do after this season, whether that meant he wanted to play again in Green Bay, whether it meant he wanted to go play for another NFL team, or whether he wanted to retire. He shifted the decision last summer to himself. He controls what he wants to do as a result of his actions from last summer. That was what the Packers did in turn to get him into training camp last summer. And yes, he's had a better relationship with the organization and things this year up until last night went very well.
Grass is not always greener. They won 13 games in a row, 3 years in a row. Number one seed, 2 years in a row. There's a lot of talent, and that division is weak. We have no idea what Justin Fields is going to be with the Bears. The Lions have no answer at quarterback. And the Vikings, they are max a 9-8 team, it feels like, with that squad over there with Kirk Cousins. If I'm Aaron Rodgers, I'm like, you know what? It's pretty good here. Gets cold, but it's pretty good living here, and he's done a lot of winning, at least in the regular season. And then going over to Tom Brady, was asked about not thinking about retirement.
I haven't put a lot of thought into it, so we'll just take it day by day and see where we're at. Truthfully, guys, I'm thinking about this game and not thinking about anything past 5 minutes from now.
And what a near collapse by the Rams. The Rams beat the Bucks 30-27. They were up. They were about to go up at the half, either 23-3 or 27-3. Cam Akers fumbles the ball. Hey, third quarter, they score. They're up 27-3 late in the third. Then a Cooper Kupp fumble, three and out. That snap over Matt Stafford's head recovered by the Bucks. They have a missed field goal, a three and out, and then another Cam Akers fumble that leads to the Fournette touchdown. Suddenly the game is tied at 27, and we were all freaking out. And here's the interesting thing. Actually, give me the and this will go into it. The head coach of your Los Angeles Rams, Sean McVay, talked about how Matt Stafford played an unbelievable game.
I thought Matthew Stafford was unbelievable throughout the whole day. Just his poise, his command, his demeanor, his decision-making. We put a lot on him. They present a lot of difference to the pass downs, but on early downs as well. And Matthew got us in and out of a lot of the right stuff.
Man, Sean McVay talks fast.
He does. He talks very fast. But ask yourself this. If he loves Matt Stafford and what Stafford did, how come with after that snap ball that went over Stafford's head, after that play, The next 13 plays, 11 were runs. McVay took the ball out of Stafford's hands. He's like, and again, it's not like you do what Atlanta did when they were up in the Super Bowl against the Patriots and they're still passing way too much. That Matt Ryan sack that took him out of field. They got conservative.
Yeah, they did.
They got
definitely
real conservative for a good stretch.
Definitely. You saw it on that second down play where Cam Akers fumbled. There's a lot of people going, why did they not pass the ball there? Because that's typically a passing situation, right? But it seems like, for all the talent Matthew Stafford does have, it seems like McVay doesn't trust his decision-making at the crucial times.
There's not 100% trust. And listen, Stafford, 366 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. He got lucky. Jamal Dean passed in the end zone, should have picked it off. He didn't. But when they needed it, when that game was tied at 27-27, hits Kupp for 20 yards on an out route. Then the six-man blitz. And that's a case where I know prevent defense prevents victories and that cliche, but maybe that's not the time to be sending a six-man blitz. And it gets picked up long enough for Kupp for 44 yards, and Stafford hits him in stride. So for all the hell that Matt Stafford's been on in his career at Detroit, he is now in the NFC Championship game. And for the Rams, who gave up lots and lots of draft picks to bring in Stafford, it is certainly paid off. Von Miller had another good game. A curious Jalen Ramsey got beat by Mike Evans, but hey, Mike Evans is a Pro Bowl wideout, and it was Tom Brady throwing him the ball. But that game, I mean, that game almost became a classic collapse, and somehow the Rams were able to hold on.
Oh, an all-time choke job from the Rams. Yeah, Jalen Ramsey better be careful, too. If they're going to keep calling taunting penalties, he's better. It's a good thing he covers his mouth, because that guy is talking constantly. Yeah. My big question, Matt, felt like I woke up on Sunday, and then everyone was just talking about Tom Brady retiring. I hadn't thought about that at all this season. Now, obviously, he's 44. He can retire whenever he wants. He's the greatest player of all time. But where did this narrative come from about Tom Brady hanging it up? It seems like he himself started it as well.
Yeah, it's I heard like Bill Simmons on his podcast talking about it, and every now and then some of the top NFL gas bags and / reporters, it is getting a little bit of play.
Yeah,
I don't know why,
but out of nowhere though.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're Brady, you know, I mean, listen, walking away from Tampa, that is a really talented team. I'm sure they're in salary cap hell. Everyone's in salary cap hell, but he led the NFL in passing attempts and yards near the top and touchdown passes. He was one of the favorites to win the MVP until that 9-0 loss to the Saints. Like, he can still do it. The question is, does he want to do it? And you know what? Let's start there with my next guest. Former NFL quarterback Sean King is going to join the show, and we'll get his thoughts on that. And how much did he enjoy that Bills and Chiefs game? That's coming up in a moment, but first, traffic.
This is Gameplay on TSN 1050.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountains?
We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I am your host, Matthew Kaz. You are listening to Gameplay. Join me now. It is Sean King, former NFL quarterback, and now hosting a show, The Nightcap, which is on VSiN. Again, VSiN is the sports betting network, the first 24/7 broadcast network dedicated exclusively to sports betting. Sean, how you doing, my friend?
I'm excellent. I'm a little tired from the weekend, but
yeah,
I'm up and kicking today.
So let's start here. After that quarterback display that we saw on Sunday night between Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, when that game ended, did you want to light a cigarette?
A cigar? I'm not really into the cigarettes, but I definitely lit a cigar. For one, if you watch the nightcap, the Kansas City Chiefs were Big King's best bet of the entire weekend. So a lot of people follow my advice, and I knew a lot of people had their hard-earned money on the Chiefs, which I recommended. So I was stressed out in that instance. But, I mean, what a phenomenal game. I mean, the last minute and a half of the game, like, I mean, could you ask for anything better?
No. Oh, no. By the way, yeah, and you can follow Sean on Twitter, at RealSeanKing. There's 13 seconds left. They're down by 3. I imagine at that moment, at least part of you was second-guessing that bet.
Well, I start second guessing it when Jay Feely, the ultimate mush in America, you know, starts talking about how great the Chiefs kicker is, and then he proceeds to miss a field goal and an extra point. And I said, at some point, those 4 points are going to prove pretty important in this game. So my skepticism had arisen quite earlier in the contest.
It did. Just as a former quarterback, how much fun, like, just when you, I mean, obviously you watch that game differently than the way we would. I'm curious just how you process that game, just seeing what Mahomes and Allen could do from start to finish.
Well, I just think if you're an organization, you had to look at that game and say, if we don't have one of those guys, because I mean, just the individual performance of Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen, I mean, there are not many guys on the planet that can make those kind of plays, you know, in that kind of environment. I actually, you know, tweeted out yesterday, you know, to me, when Mahomes at his best is the best that's ever played the game of football.
Yeah.
Like he does some things that are unnecessary, that are risky, but that I wish he would refine and rein in a little bit. But when he's playing at his best, I mean, he's the only guy that can beat you with his feet, can beat you with his arm, can beat you with his brain, can beat you with his creativeness. You know, he threw one ball like sidearm because the guy was trying to bat it down on the run. Like, just the combination of being elite in every area, I mean, he's as good as I've ever seen.
It's incredible. It was this was one of those classic games where at the end, it's like you all, like, this is a game you feel bad for the team that lost because it's hard to look at Buffalo and say they should have done this or this, because this was just one of those nights where I don't think any defense was going to work against those quarterbacks.
Yeah. And, you know, just before we put a bow on Mahomes, I don't think people have kind of wrapped their brain around the start to his career. If I'm not mistaken, this is his fourth year in the NFL. They've been to, what, two Super Bowls and won one already.
Yep.
And the other year they lost in the AFC Championship game because the defensive end jumped off sides to the New England Patriots. So, I mean, he's on a pace. If they can find a way to win it this year, I mean, he's on a pace where you got to start considering, you know, him being the only guy that could potentially threaten Brady.
It's in terms of start of career, no one's done it better. Like Dan Marino, had that argument for a little while, but it's the combination of productivity and playoff wins from Patrick Mahomes. And you're right, D Ford doesn't go offside. Kansas City is taking on Jared Goff and the Rams in the Super Bowl, and maybe it's that's a completely different game. At any point, Sean, when they started to make their comeback, at what point did you think, oh, I can't believe it, Brady's going to do it again?
Well, I never really felt like that because it wasn't really a Bucs comeback as much as it was a Rams implosion.
Yeah.
I mean, all of the Bucs success came off of Rams. I mean, Cooper starts it off by fumbling, you know, so the Bucs get advantageous field position. I think they had just went for it on fourth down and didn't get it. So they take advantage of that. And then Cam Akers fumbles twice, you know, which gives them the ball with great field position. So, I mean, as much as Brady's done in his career, I just think he really wasn't playing on an even, fair playing field yesterday. I mean, because without Tristan Wirfs, I mean, they were extremely undermanned on the offensive line. And then Donovan Smith played as bad a game on the left side as I've seen him play in years. So, yeah, it was a tremendous, you know, just show of resilience by the defending champs to even be in that game. But I think it was more so the Rams' inability to handle that platform and really know how to close the game out that put the Bucs back in it.
It was going towards a classic choke job until, what were your thoughts on the play calling by the defensive coordinator with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers going for that six-man blitz?
It's awful. And, you know, I haven't listened to all the post-game stuff. It seems like there might have been some miscommunication there. But, I mean, that single-handedly, at least, as I've seen, is the worst play call in Bucs history. I mean, you're in a situation where all the momentum's on your side. All you got to do is get the game to overtime. And the way things are going, I mean, it seems like it's an 85-90% probability that the Bucs are going to win that game if it goes to overtime. So, to not have a middle field safety in that situation, I mean, it's unfathomable to me. You know, if it comes out today that there was a mix-up in the signals, is what it is, it still goes to the coordinator. I mean, you practice situational football all the time. I mean, that's completely on the call. I mean, you've got your safety 7-8 yards from the line of scrimmage playing outside leverage on a guy that's probably going to win offensive MVP in Cooper Kupp with no help over the top. I mean, that's scheme all the way.
It was just it was a ridiculous call. And good for Stafford for being able to make the throw and stand in there. His numbers look great. He was good and bad in that game. But moving on to the NFC Championship game. Sean, speaking of quarterbacks, we're joined by Sean King, host of the Nightcap on VSiN. You can go to VSIN.com, go to the website. You can find all the information, find all the shows. Next year, Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, are they in the same place they are in right now?
I think Tom is, I mean, it's actually ludicrous to me that anybody would even ask Tom if he's coming back. I mean, if you take his age away, I mean, he threw for 5,300 yards and 45 touchdowns. So it's not like we're watching Big Ben Roethlisberger, you know what I mean, who you're like, Ben, it's time to sit it down, big fella. I mean, we're looking at Brady and we're like, holy smokes. I mean, he's lighting people up. So I just think he's playing at such a high level. You know, ride it out. I mean, the deal with professional sports is, guys, once you retire, I mean, it's over. Like, it's not like you're going to come back 4 years from now when you're 48, you know, and say, I want to play again. So, I mean, it's such a finality to saying that I'm finished. And, you know, he's playing at such a high level. I truly think that Tampa tries to keep the whole group together because I think they know if they were healthy that they definitely beat the Rams. And now you're one game away. You know, from a home game, actually, from playing in back-to-back Super Bowls. Rodgers, on the other hand, you know, I always like to flip this question. If you're Green Bay, what have you really done with Rodgers from a championship standpoint? Like, as much talent as you surrounded him with from the time he got to Green Bay to now, what, he's taken you to one Super Bowl?
Yep.
So it's not like you're moving away from, you know, this four-time Super Bowl winner, six appearances, or, you know, two-time winner, four appearances, you know. And with all the stress and the friction he seems to cause, you know, from time to time, I mean, maybe the organization needs a restart. Maybe Aaron needs a restart, you know. And it's crazy to say because just based on pure talent, I mean, he's as talented as anyone, you know, in the game of football. But how many times can you get the home game in the NFC Championship or in the NFC playoffs and continue to lose? You know, I saw a stat that was put up until 01, Green Bay was 12-0 in home playoff games. And since 02, they're 7-7. And a lot of that is with Rodgers under center. So sometimes people just need changes of scenery. Maybe it's that time for Rodgers and for Green Bay.
What went wrong with the Packers' offense? That first touchdown drive on their first drive was clinical, methodical. They didn't even have a third down. And after that, they, you know, did almost nothing offensively.
Well, you have to give credit to San Francisco. You know,
yep.
When they did an outstanding job of minimizing Green Bay's ability to run the football and making them one-dimensional. You know, I thought, in my opinion at least, Green Bay was a little too conservative. I don't think they pushed the ball down the field as much as they should, you know, force San Francisco to make plays on the ball down the field. I think that's where the 49ers are vulnerable in their secondary. You know, I didn't think they isolated Jimmy Ward enough, the guy who ultimately blocked the field goal right before the half. You know, I think the Rams have shown that he's a liability in pass coverage, and I don't think Green Bay attacked that. So, you know, and again, like, who felt like Rodgers was the best player on the field? And when you're making that kind of money, when you go through the public things that he does, nothing criminal, but, you know, I'm immunized, but I'm not vaccinated. No matter how you think about it, you know, the whole offseason, I'm not coming. I'm mad at you guys. You know, to me, in those games, even in losses, I got to feel like you were the best player. And I just don't think at any point Aaron made us feel even remotely emotionally like Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes made us feel last night.
No, not even close. I thought it was a bad game for Rodgers, and there was one play that stuck out. I mean, I know all the focus goes on that block punt that tied the game at 10, and it should. The special teams for Green Bay was lousy, but on that drive on second down, here comes Josh Norman on the field. It was not played a lot at corner this year, and he's matched up with Devonta Adams. Rodgers misses that pass. The next play, Rodgers gets sacked. The next play is the block punt. Like, that to me was the sneaky bad moment for Aaron Rodgers this past weekend.
Yeah, he caught him in two, man. And, you know, Norman was playing inside leverage, and Rodgers just threw the ball a little too far up the field and a little low, you know. But again, like, when to my parent, my dad always said, to whom much is given, much is required. So, you know, Rodgers, you make the big money, you talk the big talk, you got to make the big plays. And, you know, if you don't, then you're going to open yourself up for criticism. And, you know, it just is what it is. And if this was the first time this happened to him, you know, I would say, okay. But last year in the NFC Championship game, he's rolling to the right to run the football in to win the game. Or I think it was tied or win it at the end. And he throws it back across his body and it's broken up. And so we've seen this late in games 2 years in a row in home games that the Packers are favored. You know, so, hey, he's underachieved, I think we can say so far, if you look at what he's been able to help the Packers accomplish from a team standpoint.
Agreed. And, I mean, God, it feels that there should have been more playoff wins when you consider the talent that is on that roster. Hey, Sean, before we go, looking ahead, not saying you got to give me any picks now. It's only Monday. But is there any way you are leaning? I mean, obviously, everyone's going to be taking Kansas City, but are you going to take him as a 7-point favorite against Cincinnati? And I think the Rams are about a 3.5-point favorite over San Fran. Is there any way you're leaning? Or if not yet, what is there any storylines that really interest you this week?
Well, I think the one that's getting overlooked is the job that Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow have done in Cincinnati. I mean, that organization is a perfect example of if you actually get it right in the draft, it doesn't take long to turn the franchise around. They took Joe Burrow, number one. He was a deserving number one pick. He's been everything they could ask for. He's doing all this after tearing his ACL last year. They went against the grain and took Ja'Marr Chase. A lot of people thought they should have went O-line with that first selection, but they went Ja'Marr Chase, and he's going to be rookie of the year. So, I mean, shout out to them. Joe Mixon is a kid that, you know, had some off-the-field stuff. They did their due diligence. They were comfortable. You know, he hadn't gotten in any situations, you know, since he's been there. So, I mean, hats off to the Bengals. I think we'd be remiss if we don't give them credit, because no one outside of the Bengal fans, and most of them didn't either, had them in the AFC Championship game.
Oh, no. I mean, it's, you know, the last time they've gotten even close to this far, they injured Bo Jackson and ended his career back in the 90 season, 91, the 91 playoffs. And by the way, I think both things can be true. The Bengals did the right thing taking Ja'Marr Chase, but the Bengals need a lot of help still on pass protection. Yeah, Burrow got sacked nine times.
Bit, huh?
Yeah, nine times.
And can we speak on it? I know we're probably up against it from a break standpoint, but I mean, teams like the Tennessee Titans, like, I'd hate to be in that position. They have done such a great job of building and developing a team. You went out and signed Julio Jones for this one specific reason. He had a good game, but then you don't have a dude at quarterback. And that lack of eliteness at one position single-handedly, because if you look at Tennessee's team, with that front, they could beat anybody. You know, probably it's going to end up costing them a chance to win a championship. So, you know, it's the have and the have-nots right now in the NFL. Either you have an elite guy or you have a guy that's just good enough to not quite get you where you need to be, and that's got to be frustrating.
Oh, absolutely. My producer, Austin, is banging his... Oh, there it is. My producer's a Titans fan. I've come to talk. He's got a...
Hey, grand opening, grand closing with Ryan Tannehill, right? First pass interception, last pass interception, both unnecessary.
And in the middle, another interception. Hey, Sean, if people want to follow him on Twitter, at RealSeanKing. Website is VSIN.com, VSIN.com. Sean, all the best. Enjoy the week. We will chat with you soon. And, I mean, next weekend can't be as good as this weekend. If it's
Don't count the NFL out. Don't count them out. Remember, wild card weekend, we had dogs winning, so... I mean, the favorites won, but it was excellent performances. The NFL has the most parity of any pro sports league. Never forget that. That's why it's king.
Yeah, listen, the only way next week's going to be better if during the game if Patrick Mahomes actually learns to fly, like starts to fly in the air and gives everyone a booster shot. That's the only way it's going to be even more interesting. Hey, Sean, all the best, my friend. We'll talk soon.
All right, man. Enjoy your week.
Take care. That is former NFL quarterback and was with the Tampa Bay Bucks when they won the Super Bowl. It is Sean King. All right, we got to take a break. On the other side, it is Sound of the Day. We wrap up a crazy Monday in sports. That's coming up right here on Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Kaus. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I am your host, Matthew Kaus. Overdrive is coming up next. Remember to stream us at tsn1050.ca. Download the iHeartRadio app. Get every show live or on demand. All the podcasts as well. We do this at the end of each and every show. It is time now for Sound of the Day.
Sound of the Day! Sound of the Day! Here comes the Sound of the Day!
And we start with Joe Burrow talking about his rookie kicker, McPherson, who had four field goals, two of the 50-yard-plus variety, including, I think, the 52-yard game winner. And here is Joe Burrow recounting his conversation with his rookie kicker before he won the game.
Talking to Brandon as he was going out to kick, he gave a little warm-up swing, and he said, "Ah, looks like we're going to the AFC Championship," right before he went out there to kick it. I mean, we knew exactly what we had as soon as he walked into the building in camp, and we just saw how he carried himself.
How you feeling there?
He's such a cool guy. He's so cool. No, I feel awful.
How much do you wish you had Joe Burrow on your team?
So much, so much. And then Sean King had to rub it in there with that Tannehill comment. It's good to talk about it, a little therapeutic, but man, brutal loss.
Yeah, that one... The funny thing is, though, it's not even close.
Not even close to the worst of the weekend. It wasn't even second worst.
No, it's the third worst. It's the third worst loss of the night. And let's go to the final play in overtime, Kansas City beating the Buffalo Bills.
36-36 tie in overtime. Chiefs first down and goal to go. Mahomes looks to throw it. Pump faking right side he wants. And a comeback cut. It is caught by Kelce. Touchdown, Kansas City. One of the greatest duos in the history of the National Football League. Patrick Mahomes to Travis Kelce on a push fake comeback. And the Chiefs have won this incredible divisional playoff game in overtime.
God, and to Bills fans everywhere, I feel for you. And I'm not even going to say, hey, you know, do this or this to feel better. Just know it will get better, and at least you got Josh Allen. You don't have Ryan Tannehill like Austin does. You don't have Daniel Jones like I do. So maybe one day that'll make it feel better, but I get why it probably doesn't make you feel great now. A hell of a weekend of football. Can't wait. We'll be talking about all this weekend. You're set for the AFC-NFC Championship game. That is it for me. Have a great day, everyone. Be good. Be safe. Catch you tomorrow. You've been listening to Gameplay right here on TSN 1050. Time now for News Talk 1010 Traffic Update.